Welcome to Fat Camp show number 19 for sometime around the first of the year. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Welcome to Fat Camp number 19. It's been about a month.
Yes, it has.
A little bit over a month since we last sat down and talked about fat and plus bikes.
As we record this, we have just ended up having, what has it been, about 4 or 5 days of like full-on true blue winter.
We're in.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to go anytime soon. It's going to stick around. Temperatures will be good.
Yep, hopefully we can start building some base and really getting some good stuff going on.
So everyone's got their headset swapped around and got the fat tires on and got the little tiny chain rings up front.
Well, it's sort of been a process. Everybody's been scrambling to get the fatty tires on and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. November was so warm that we didn't know if it was ever going to come, but it's here.
And
so is another episode of Fat Camp. We've got some things we're going to chat about this evening, as usual, but I also want to preface this by saying this will be one of the cleanest Fat Camps.
One for the kids.
Yeah, this is one for the kids. We're going to clean up our mouth.
Maybe.
No more. Yeah, we're not going to let it slip so much.
We'll see a beer or two from now.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. Do you want to just start talking about what's on the list?
Well, I want to start with what I screwed up last time on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And it has to do with the bear claw, Balthazar.
Yeah, I saw someone kind of.
Well, let me just sort of say right at the get-go before we get into the weeds.
Yeah.
I described that on the last show as being an open mold, and it is not an open mold. The people that are producing that, they ended up purchasing their mold, and they were involved with every single detail of developing the entire frame. So it might look somewhat similar to some other ones out there, and it actually doesn't look that similar. The hexagonal down tube's a little bit unique, but the geometry is what is really unique.
Open mold means, this is where I play the dummy, anybody can make that frame?
Yeah,
that
like
geometry?
Either there's a, you know, some company over in China that's making carbon stuff, and, you know, they're like, we've got, you know, molds X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically anybody's like, okay, I'm going to get the bikes that are, you know, out of the X mold, put this sticker on the down tube.
Okay.
So, like an example of that, of course I say an example of that. Now I can't remember the name of the brand. It's the one that QBP just started up.
Heller?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's, Heller's an example of that. So, you know, like with the Heller brand, what they're offering is, you know, you've got some warranty, you've got some dealer support, you've got some things like that to kind of back that up. That's where the advantages of that over, like, just ordering it straight from China in some way, which would end up being a little bit cheaper. But in the case of the Bear Claw, they go even one step further, and they customized the geometry, and they ended up having a mold cut specifically for what they wanted to do, and you know, they've really kind of specialized it for what they feel like is optimal for, in this case, the sort of the Midwest riding. It's a really good sort of race fat bike.
Yeah, you can check out. Did you do a fine? Don't you have to? Are you going to get it back for the winter?
Yeah, supposedly I'm going to end up getting it back here pretty soon, and I'll be able to end up testing it out in the snow.
It's a good read at fatbike.com. It was good.
Yeah, we'll put a link to it in there.
But nice clarification, though, for it.
Yeah, you know, so like all I've really done right now is written up the 29 plus sort of review of it, because they gave me the bike with 29 plus wheels, and I ended up riding it and doing like a race or two in it and some stuff like that. And now I'll be getting it back with true fat wheels and riding it and doing some stuff like that. So
yeah,
we'll see how it works.
And you got another one you're testing out too.
Yeah, I got the Otso.
Wow.
Yep. So
and 500 million tires.
Yep. That's been a lot of fun. Should end up having a review up for the V-Tire Apache Fatty, which is that humongous slick tire.
Yeah.
It ends up measuring out like on 100 mil rims at like 4.9 inches.
Yeah.
So it's a big tire.
It's rad, though.
It is. Yeah, you'll understand that a lot more once the article gets published.
Right.
But that was a surprisingly good tire, like surprisingly versatile tire.
Cool.
There are certain things that it didn't do real well in, like, you know, leaves. You know, those knobs kind of like punch through, and, you know, without having that, you know, it was a little bit sketchy. But other than that, I mean, it was a great beach tire, yeah, and some stuff like that. I was actually really surprised with how versatile that was. So
yeah, I was surprised. I didn't even ride it, but I was like, why would I want that? But now I understand.
Yeah. But
so it's going to be a busy winter for you, though.
Yeah. Well, that's that Apache Fatty is not going to touch my bike.
No.
A couple months now until the snow goes away. But I got all the terrain tires and
all the terrain tires.
The, you know, these last couple days, now that we started to get some snow, I've been riding the Vittoria Cannolis.
Yeah.
So far, I've been real impressed with those.
Yeah.
I think that is a potential, you know, challenger to the Bud and Lou crown, which, you know, right now I've tried several different 4.8 inch tires, and I don't think anything can touch the Bud and the Lou. Cannoli might be able to.
For what they do.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that includes, you know, Jumbo Jims and the Maxxis, what is it, FBR and FBF,
RBR or whatever,
and
yeah,
you know, all that kind of stuff.
Minion stuff.
Yeah, all those. So, you know, it's like still Bud and Lou are supreme, but
gotcha.
Cannoli's a solid tire.
Good, good. And then you're writing about that too?
Yep.
Gotcha.
So hopefully going to be doing some sort of midterm, you know, review on that here. Now that I've actually started to get that on some snow, I was hoping to ride some terrain tires today, but
why didn't you mount them up?
I tried.
Come on, man.
I've gotten really spoiled. Let me just put it that way. I think let me preface it by saying that. Excuse me. I'm used to carbon wheels that go tubeless very easily. You know, I can swap tires around. You know, it's like you just hit them with the air compressor and pop, they're in place and you're all good.
Right.
And then this wheel set that's on the Otso, I don't remember the name of the rims, but it's a tubeless compatible wheel set, but it's got cutouts in the rims, so it adds enough texture to the rims now that the, you know, the rim strip is kind of like stretched,
mm-hmm,
that the tire doesn't seal particularly well. So this morning, you know, I'm like, okay, I got like 45 minutes to swap around to, you know, a different set of tires, because I was riding, you know, like 4-inch tires. Well, actually, I had a B plus wheel set on there because I was testing it out because it was still dry. I also ended up having 4-inch tires, but we're definitely like straight into. Gonna have a.
Hang on, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, he's trying to open a beer. Ah, yes.
All right.
Okay, so I had 4-inch tires on there, but we've just like dove straight into 4-inch tires for my size is not enough.
Right.
We've got like probably 12 inches of powder right now. And, you know, so I was like, I got to have, you know,
some beef.
Yeah. A big tire, you know, at least a 4.5 plus tire. So I try switching it over and can't get it. You know, I thought this was going to be some quickie thing, and
they're tubeless ready rims.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a bunch of tricks that I can do, like where you put the inner tube in and then you end up seating, you know, like the bead on one side, you know, you pop out the other side, you take the tube out, and then you flip the tire over so the loose side is down, so the tire kind of drapes.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, but that's bullshit. That's going to be like, you know, my one, yeah, like foul language for, you know, the show. But I just
throw cutouts aren't necessary?
There's rims that are doing it well without cutouts.
Okay.
And in this case, it just added enough texture to the interior wall of that rim that I can't just blast the thing into place.
But it allows you to see a cool rim strip.
That's not a reason to have cutouts. I mean, I have to admit, I am a little bit nostalgic about cutouts because there's a lot of cool-looking bikes that they've done some neat stuff with cutouts.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll take tubeless any day.
So you couldn't, what tires were you going to put on there?
I was going to put the Terrain 4.6, I think they're listed as.
Those
Wazias.
Wazias.
With the studs.
Yeah.
Because down at the beach, I've got ice now. We don't really have bergs or anything, but it's like the beach is like there's a bunch of waves that went up on the sand.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, a whole bunch of ice and stuff that you can ride around and test studded tires. Gotcha. And, you know, stuff like that. So I'm like, sweet, I'll put these on. They'll be great for the powder that's kind of inland. They'll be great for, you know, testing out the studs on the ice. And I got shut up.
Is there any negative to having studs in snow? I mean, is it?
I don't think so. Them,
but I mean, why not? Despite the, I mean, the price might kind of scare you away, but I mean, if you've got
the only negatives are price and weight.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Otherwise, they're like totally neutral. I mean, like, as a for instance, another tire that I'm testing, the V tire Snow Avalanche.
Yeah.
Like a week ago, were you on that ride? I think you were.
Where?
Down in Ludington.
Yeah.
Yeah. We ended up having our local bike club meeting,
yeah.
And beforehand, we got a bunch of people together and ended up riding. And it was snowing at that time, but it was
warm.
The ground wasn't frozen at all. So it was just, it made it kind of a sloppy, messy, nasty. And those tires rocked in that.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with those.
How wide are they?
It's a 4-inch tire.
Okay.
But they've got some really good side knobs. So I was able to just rip around corners.
Yeah.
In that case, it's studded. You know, I didn't feel like the studs were any kind of detriment whatsoever at all. But the side knobs on those tires are great.
Really?
Yeah. Like compared to people that were on like the big fat Nards and a couple other tires like that, I was cornering way better.
Surprise, surprise. Jumbo Jim doesn't do well in mud nor snow.
It's a great dirt tire, but that's about it.
It is a great dirt tire, yeah, but I had to get those off as soon as I possibly could.
Yeah, yeah. So,
anyway,
some interesting stuff that way. So, yeah, that's the Snow Avalanche. That's another tire you're going to be seeing some stuff about.
Wow.
I didn't think a 4-inch tire was up. Like, even the Snow Avalanche, I think, is going to be a pretty decent 4-inch tire. Like, it's actually got some traction.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, my sort of summer 4-inch tires that I had on the Otso, that was like a Jumbo Jim and a Husker Du, and there's like no chance in hell I was going to try to ride that today.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
People still riding Husker Dus in the winter?
Yeah. Like Dave McLean ended up riding him today. And I mean, he was a little bit all over the place, but he's an amazing rider, and he was able to. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know if this was in our last show or not, but, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit down the line, but the rolling resistance stuff, they've continued to end up doing that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, I want to say we talked about this the last show, but they ended up testing the Van Helga and compared it to like the Husker Du.
Right.
And the
Van
Helga, which is a much, much, much more aggressive tire.
Yeah.
It has the same amount of rolling resistance as a Husker Du, basically.
Do you want to talk about that study right now?
Yeah, we can just dive right into it.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, this kind of gets back to why I'm kind of a snob and I pretty much only run tubeless on my fat bike now. But we've got a link in the show notes to Bike Rumor where they talk a little bit about like the rolling resistance of fat bike tubeless versus tubed.
Okay.
And, you know, this goes back to that same site we had referenced a few shows back where they ended up testing the rolling resistance of a bunch of different fat bike tires.
Oh, this was Wolftooth.
Yeah, Wolftooth has sponsored this. Okay. So hats off to Wolftooth. This is amazing information. I'm so glad that they're, you know, supporting this and making this happen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, bottom line is if you compare tubeless versus tubed tires, you save 10 watts per tire at normal, like, fat bike pressures. And when I say normal fat bike pressures, I think that was 8 PSI?
8, 12, yes.
6 PSI. So, I mean, to me, I kind of feel like 6 PSI is a normal, like, winter pressure. And, you know, they tested several different tires, you know, at that pressure, like tubed and tubeless, and pretty consistently it was 9 to 10 watts difference per wheel.
And remind me, is that a lot?
That's a fair amount. Like, your average rider can put out, like, 200 watts.
Okay.
So we're talking a 10% difference.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, you know, pretty darn significant.
And they tested it on 3 different tires?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. All right.
Yep. So, you know, from different manufacturers and stuff like that. So, and it was consistently that much better each time.
Well, okay, so there's a weight savings, obviously, which is...
Sometimes. It's not necessarily.
Oh, really? Because the sealant weighs as much as a tube?
No, because especially if you're going with a non-tubeless ready rim,
yeah,
you can gain a whole ton of weight trying to get like the rim strips and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, rim strips, non-tubeless rim, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, even if you look at like the mule fit and stuff like that, it's like some of the solutions to make that thing go tubeless are pretty darn heavy.
Oh, Gorilla Tape and...
Yeah, and I want to say they have a specialty rim strip and some stuff. Like, and it's just, you know, a lot of people don't think about the rim strip, but that is a really significant source of weight.
Okay.
In some systems. If it's just a lightweight tape and it's adhesive and stuff like that, kind of like a stands tape or whatever, like Orange Seal is making a solution now and stuff like that, that's pretty darn light. But anything else? No.
Did they test it on tubeless ready rims?
The rolling resistance?
Yeah.
I have no idea. And I don't think that really makes a difference.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's like you had just talked about. Just talked about, you know, the weight difference.
Weight savings, yeah. Well, which led me to my other point then. Okay. So screw the weight savings because, yeah, I don't. Anyway, rolling resistance. But does it come at a price? I mean, can you get this setup cheap? Not cheap, but do you have to spend an arm and a leg to get tubeless ready stuff?
Not anymore.
Okay, not anymore.
I mean, most of the tires are tubeless ready, and there's several good options for tubeless ready rims.
Okay.
So, you know, like my other brother, Daryl,
That's
a great rim.
Aluminum rim, yeah.
The Mule Fit, you know, that's a good rim.
Okay.
And there's a gazillion other options, thank goodness. I mean, I'm so glad that, you know, the fat bike world is finally starting to mature enough that they're starting to have, like, good tubeless ready economical options.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, quite frankly... you know, I don't think you should buy a bike unless it's got tubeless ready wheel sets at this point.
Okay.
You know, if it's a matter of you like not riding or, you know, riding, like you got $800 and this is the only way you can get on a fat bike,
right,
go for it. But in general, like if you're, you know, if you are like, an avid rider and you're like, okay, I want to get a fat bike, make sure it's tubeless ready.
Gotcha.
Cause I mean, it's just, it's such a huge deal.
Oh yeah. I don't know how many flats I've gotten and don't even know about it.
Well, I just look at, like, today's ride, and the only person who had, like, issues with their pressure is the dude with the tubes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Todd?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Good to know. Check out, you know, there's graphs, there's charts.
Yeah, there's just a lot of good information.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad that they're doing these rolling resistance tests. You know, this is something that is not directly applicable to the real world, but at the same time, it's one variable in that equation that, you know, we never had before. So it's really, really important research.
Good. Good to know. Good that you know, because you can explain it to me. hey, we went, should we say something about Brown County?
Heck yeah, we should. Brown County's awesome.
That was a great trip.
Yes, it was.
We went down right after we recorded the last podcast. Instead of doing the Iceman Cometh Mountain Bike Challenge up in Traverse City, Kalkaska to Traverse City, the solar system's largest mountain bike, single day mountain bike race, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, great time. We opted to go down to Brown County and have a little party amongst three of us down there, camping up at the top of Raccoon Ridge there and then just riding right out of there.
Yeah.
And as always, everything was great.
Yeah, we had just amazing
weather. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Shorts.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, you know, short sleeves and, you know, shorts.
Yeah.
It's like, and you're totally comfy.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was really, 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 really good riding.
Yep. It's awesome.
So, yeah, I highly recommend it if anybody can get down there, to get down there.
Yeah, and you don't have to, if you're a really good rider, you can just ride it fast. If you're not a really good rider, you're still going to be all right.
Yeah, and they have a really nice mix. I mean, they got some really technical stuff.
Yep.
You know, then they also have some stuff that's way more chill.
Right. Didn't we talk about this before, about having the air compressor in the hub?
Yes, so you're moving on to the next
I'm moving on to the next one, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely did. The thing is, there was a little bit more information that came out. Like, I don't know why, but this company is being a bit coy about what's going on. I guess they ended up having a booth in Interbike, but they wouldn't end up like scheduling any meetings with the press or this. I'll be honest, the move that they made kind of skeeves me out. I don't know how else to put it.
Skeeves?
Skeeves. Yep.
Okay.
So
There'll be a link in the show notes for that definition.
Exactly, that Urban Dictionary. So the interesting thing, though, is they did end up providing some more information.
What do you got?
So the big thing is they actually said, like, how many watts it takes. Let me kind of go back. There's an inner chamber. You could call it like an inner tube, but it's not an inner tube. It's an inner chamber inside of the bigger tire. It's kind of like the Schwalbe Procore concept.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that inner chamber has high pressure in it. And okay. What they do is when you want to raise the pressure in your tire, they move air from that inner chamber to the outer, you know, the portion between that chamber between and that like your tire.
Yeah.
So that's how they effectively raise it. And there's zero resistance when doing that.
Oh.
But if you want to pump back up that inner chamber, you basically want to move it from, you know, your tire back into that inner chamber, it takes 45 watts at 9.5 miles an hour in order to end up doing that. Now, what I really wish they would say is that 45 watts per wheel or is that 45 watts for both wheels? Because the difference between 45 watts and 90 watts is huge. Like we said before, you know, like, you know, your typical rider, they can put out 200 watts. You know, if it's half of the work that you're doing just to basically let air out of your tires,
yeah,
that's going to make you feel like a slug. But if it's 45 watts for two wheels, that's pretty darn good.
You wouldn't notice it?
Well, you would notice it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you would definitely have a drag. And by the way, you know, that's typically what you're going to end up doing is you might do that on like on a downhill or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
You definitely will notice it, but if it's just for a short little period while you're deflating your tires, that's not that big a deal.
How does it get to the inner side? How does it get in there?
Well, that's where the pump, it's like the pump takes air out of, you know, your sort of your fat bike tire chamber,
yeah,
and it pumps up that inner chamber.
Okay. Wow. It's all about the pump.
The pump. Feel the pump. God. Yes.
It's just too gimmicky. I wouldn't want to have this on my bike, I don't think.
I don't know.
There's times now that we're in the season. I want to let air out and let air in.
Well, okay. So today, riding pretty challenging, you know, conditions, like traction-wise.
Yeah.
You know, we're on a group ride. I'm like, I really would like to let some air out of my tires, but I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy who's like, lets his air out of his tires. He's like, hey, guys, sorry, I let too much air out of my tires. I got to stop and fill them up.
Anybody have a pump?
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't do it.
Right.
You know, I was like, I'm still doing better than other people, but I don't really feel like I've optimized this. I think I could do better. So this is a case where, you know, I could hit a switch on my handlebars and I could do this.
Oh.
And, you know, we ended up having some variable conditions. So when we were going out, we did kind of a lollipop and we were going out and we were busting through, at that point it was probably 10 inches of fresh snow.
Fluffy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's still 10 inches of fresh snow.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, it was a lot of work and, you know, that's when I'd kind of like to end up decreasing it a lot.
Right.
But then when we're coming back, you know, we rode back on that trail and it was already packed in and stuff. So I could go with a higher pressure if I wanted to. So, you know, it's like there, I could see totally where there'd be beneficial stuff.
Oh, I think there's a need for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It's a little dorky.
And it kind of sounds like it's a, geez, you know,
that's what I'm all about.
Well, you know?
I am a class A dork.
That's a good idea. I just wish it was like easier.
Well, and I just, like I said, you know, it kind of skeeves me out with this company that they're like not wanting to talk to the media and some stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, you know,
can you buy it right now?
No.
Oh.
So it's like, you know, and that's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if they're like still trying to work out details or this, that or whatever, but it's like, come on, just, you know, transparency, get out some information.
Right.
It's still a great concept though. So.
Yeah. Let's scooch on.
Moving onward and upward.
Yeah, I want to tell me about this fit thing.
Okay.
This Fat Bike Stack and Reach.
Yeah, so we got a link in the show notes, and the site is Ride Fat Bikes. It's a Canadian site. I think it's a Canadian retailer. I'll be honest, I didn't look at that much more than some of the graphics.
You listen to a lot of podcasts, don't you?
Yeah.
Now, do you go to the show notes and click on the links?
Now and then.
Okay.
Yeah, most of the time, though, it's like they're only talking about stuff that I've already found out about.
Oh, okay. All
right. But, you know, they might provide another angle on it, which is interesting. So
well, it has no impact on whether or not we're going to put it in the show notes, but I just wonder if
people actually,
if people
yeah.
are like, hey, I'm going to go check that out.
But
anyway,
the reason why we're putting this link in there
right.
is because this site has got a really, really, really good summary of all of the stack and the reach dimensions for fat bikes.
Okay.
So so stack and reach.
Yeah.
What reach is like if you end up doing a line from the bottom bracket, from the center of your cranks, straight up.
Okay.
And then you measure from that sort of hypothetical, center. You know, line.
Yeah.
To, I think it's the center, center of the top cap of your headset.
Right. Okay.
That is the stack distance.
That's stack.
Or my bad. That's reach.
Okay.
My bad. Sorry. And largely what that tells you is like how long the bike is.
Right.
Okay. So like when you're riding out of the saddle, let's say like you're going downhill or whatever, that reach figure is very important.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of tells you, you know, where you're centered between the wheels to some extent.
I've got like sealant all over my
we
my,
just ended up like sealing up Andy's wheels. Like he just ended up switching over to the 4.8s and yeah.
So anyway, so when you go downhill you want to get your butt behind your seat.
But I mean it's this is more of a matter of okay, getting your handlebars in the right position.
Okay.
So you know, bikes typically, like modern quote unquote bikes, have been getting longer and longer reach figures.
Yeah.
So you have a shorter stem.
Yep.
So it gets you, you know, it. You can still, when you're out of the saddle, you can position yourself well on the bike.
Okay.
But it just, it's one of those things where you're not going to feel really cramped or you're not going to feel really stretched out. It's a really good indicator. So that's one piece in there. The other piece was the stack.
Yeah.
And that's essentially how high your handlebars are.
Right.
They, and it's not that, but it's like, that is basically how high the top, headset bearing is in the bike. And I guess this might not be quite headset bearing, but you know, it's kind of a measure of how tall the front of the bike is.
Head tube.
Yeah. So it's how long your fork is. It's how tall your wheel is.
Doesn't matter how much, what you got going on above the,
no, it doesn't take into account any of that because
okay.
in general, that's largely customizable. You can okay. do, you know, a stem that rises up. You can
right.
do a stem that drops down. You can put a bunch of spacers in there. You can do a bunch of different things on that.
Okay.
So that's where you can kind of control it. But you know, there's a lot of people, especially like if you're like a racier person, you know, having a shorter stack is a good thing.
Right.
You know, if you're not a racier person, having a more upright front end can be a positive thing.
Right.
But these are two figures that are really important when it comes to the fit of bikes. And they have this great chart on this site that plots all of the fat bikes. Like for, I shouldn't say all of them, but a lot of the fat bikes, most of the fat bikes that are available, production
yeah.
fat bikes
okay.
for 2016, and shows where they fall in this. So it's a really valuable thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a super, super, super valuable chart for figuring out, okay, this is an appropriate bike for me.
Yeah. I gotcha. Do you have to know that stuff about yourself already though? Do you have to know what those numbers
well,
are?
Well, if you know what your current bike is, you can be like, okay, you know, how's this bike compared to mine?
Okay.
You know, I'd like to go with a little bit shorter stem. You know, I might like to go a little more upright. I might like to go a little lower or whatever.
Right.
You know, it allows you to really kind of be able to figure that stuff out well. It
looks like there's a line of best fit, though, for most of this stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty linear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, typically, like, as your reach goes out, you know, your stack goes up.
All right. So, if you don't check out show notes, you should check this show note out.
Yeah, it's a really
cool.
valuable graphic.
And it's just fat bikes.
Yeah, and I was really impressed that they, you know, published this. It's, you know, obviously it's a retailer, they want to end up selling their bikes, but they just, it's super valuable information.
Yeah, Canada.
Yep.
Oh, it's a retailer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they end up selling some stuff. So oh. I don't remember where they're at. I want to say it was
well,
Ontario
you,
or something. But.
What do you, oh, so it's personal. I gotcha. There's not like a best head reach distance and a best stack distance. It depends on
correct
who the hell you are.
And, yeah, and you know, so it's like if you want the more modern geometry, typically you're gonna end up going with a longer reach figure.
Yeah,
so you can go with a shorter stem.
Gotcha.
So like if you're out west and you're going down a lot of steep downhills, you got some technical stuff, and this really, you know, it doesn't apply as much to snow because it's like a lot of people aren't doing super technical stuff in snow because the snow is so slippery. Right. It's kind of tough to really do technical riding in it. I mean, you certainly can, don't get me wrong, but you know, I mean, a lot of times you're not going on the super steeps just because you don't have enough traction to do it safely. But if you're, especially if you're going to go for four season fat biking, whether you're going to keep your fat bike wheel set on there or you're going to go with the plus wheel set on there, this can be some super, 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 super good information.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it just, you know, and then that kind of gets into the regionality of what bike works well here or there, wherever. You know, for instance, in the bike that I was just like totally jazzed about today, I was riding my Quirin Triple B.
Yeah.
And I've got a fairly long stem on there, short reach.
Okay.
So what that does is it gets a pretty equal weighting between my front and my rear wheels when I'm on the flats and then when I'm on not super steep downhills.
All right.
So that was really nice because, you know, I can get out of the saddle. I can put a little more weight on the front wheel.
Yeah.
It makes my front wheel stick better in corners. So I was able to, you know, carve corners better in the slippery conditions, you know, that we've got with powder, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some things like that that can be very beneficial if you know what's going to be positive for you. Now, that said, if it was rocky, gnarly, you know, type conditions, you know, I'd be, you know, ass over tea kettle with that kind of setup. That's not what I would want whatsoever at all.
Right.
So, you know, I'd probably end up switching, you know, some things around.
Gotcha.
Or going with a different bike or whatever. So it just, you know, it's one of those things that really, it's a primary thing that affects how the bike handles and how it fits you.
Those are two of the more important ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are two things.
I'm going to spend some time here.
Yeah. And, you know, and I guess, you know, I've talked a lot about reach, but, you know, the stack is just as important because, you know, that really determines how high you can get your handlebars. Like either, you know, it's like, are you going to run out of, like, if you like have your handlebars really far up, is it going to help you in that quest?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're a racer boy and you want to get your handlebars really low,
yeah,
you know, are you going to be able to do it?
See.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, you know, cool. Good stuff.
One more thing, and then we'll take a break about, speaking of, fat bikes, cause we talked about fat bikes a little bit. The most significant mountain bike revolution in the past decade, article, over at Singletracks.
Yeah. Singletracks.com. Good site.
Yeah. Good site.
Yeah. And then I particularly like this cause they agreed with me
that yeah. Oh,
fat
wow.
bikes
okay.
are the most significant MTB revolution in the past decade, if not ever.
Do you echo those sentiments?
I do because... I mean, look at what's happened with, you know, plus bikes and all this other kind of stuff as far as, you know, wheel sizes and things like that. And it's like the fat bikes really kicked it all off.
Hmm.
You know, we wouldn't have all the plus bikes and things like that if we didn't have the fat bikes.
So more revolutionary than suspension.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, suspension, I mean, if you look at it, suspension came about as soon as they started doing mountain bikes, they started playing with suspension. Hmm. And, excuse me. I mean, suspension has done some amazing stuff and it's gotten way better, you know, so I don't want to diminish how important suspension is, but it's, you know, that's kind of been, you know, in lockstep with development of mountain bikes since the get-go. But if you look at what happened with fat bikes, all of a sudden it was like a light switch and people start going with, you know, way bigger tires.
Yeah.
You know, it
lower
started
pressures.
Up. Exactly. Just doing all this different stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it really kind of turned a lot of, you know, preconceived notions on their head.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't, so I guess what I'm trying to say is not to diminish how important suspension is, but suspension's been around and it's been incremental. Whereas it was like, bam, light switch, fat bikes come around. Within a couple of years, everything had changed as far as tires.
Oh.
And what we conceived about tires and performance and all this other stuff.
Hmm.
And it's driven change in so many ways in the industry.
How about the dropper post?
Well, I mean, I think the dropper post is huge, but,
I was just kidding about it.
No.
In terms of revolution 90s in a sport, I don't think a dropper post, that's a tough argument, but.
Well, but I mean, I guess if you were going to rephrase it and be like, okay, what are the things that make my bike the most, you know, like increase the amount of fun I can have on my bike, I could drop a post ranks in there.
Right.
Performance-wise, I think, you know, in a lot of situations, you know, I think it might, you know, rank in there.
Yeah.
But revolutionary, it's not necessarily that revolutionary.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
So they agreed with you, so they're probably right then.
Of course they are. course they're right if they agreed with me.
Right, exactly.
No, it's a good article.
Yeah, check out the article.
Yeah, well reasoned and well argumented and, you know, blah 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 blah.
Right, right. Plus, well, and let me click on it here, but you get what's more entertaining is the all the comments. I think comments are almost just as good as an article sometimes on the interwebs, but
sometimes I don't have the stomach for it.
Right. Let's take a break, crack another beer, and come back with some emails, and then we'll be done.
Sounds good for me. Cool.
Welcome back, campers. After this, after our quick break here, we're going to, we asked for it and we got it. On the last show, number 18, I said something about emailing us, and sure as shoot, we got a whole bunch of emails, wow. Which is good. That was fine.
Man, that was good. You reframed there really well.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So that was for you, Chad. email is fatcamppodcasters.
Plural.
At gmail.com. Also, we are over 100 followers on the Instagram.
Yeah. Andy does a good job with the Instagram. I actually did a good job of contributing today.
Yes, that was Ken's picture you put up there up at the fire tower that was too big to fit in the Instagram. But yeah, Instagram is Fat Camp Podcast. Is it Fat Camp? I don't even know what it is. It might be Fat Camp Podcast, but it might be Fat Camp Podcasters. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you do a search, you'll find it.
Yeah, search it, you'll find it. But then shoot us an email at fatcamppodcasters.or a Gmail account if you want to, you know, complain to us or tell us how wonderful we are.
Or just have questions about stuff. I mean, we got a bunch of good questions.
Yeah. So Mike from Ann Arbor was inquiring about the maps that we've been using to
use bike packing. Kind of probably too much information, but... I ended up talking about the maps that I have on my bathroom wall.
Y'all need to come to Ken's bathroom and drop a deuce in there because it'll be
do a little research. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the journey.
Yeah, I do. I've got some really good maps of the Manistee National Forest. They're put out by National Geographic. They include all of the hiking, the biking, the motorcycles, the horse trails, you know, the Forest Service roads, the gravel county roads. It's got everything.
Yeah,
it's all on one map
and it's accurate.
Largely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's as good as a map can be.
Right.
So, it's a great piece for researching, and we ended up having, you know, Mike ended up contacting us and asking about it.
Right.
So, we'll include this in the show notes. We got links to there's sort of a northern section of the Manistee National Forest, and there's a southern portion of the Manistee National Forest. Having the physical maps is really nice for, you know, planning and visualization, but you can also end up getting these
for going poop.
Yes.
But,
but you can also get them electronically.
Yeah.
And I can't speak to like Android world and things like that, but I know as far as like the iOS world, you know, the Apple world, you can get it for your iPad and iPhone. And what you can do is you can then purchase these maps. And it will actually show you your location.
You are the blue dot.
Yeah, you're the blue dot on the map.
Right.
So they're great for navigation.
Yeah.
You know, out in the field, it's super, 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 super valuable. Right. And, you know, we're talking about the Manistee National Forest, but, you know, we've used that down in the Pisgah.
Yeah.
We've used it. I've used it out west. I've used it, you know, up north in the UP. I've used it all over the place because this is just a really, really, really good tool. And they've got a variety of maps. National Geographic produces a bunch of good maps. There's a bunch of other sources. They also have a bunch of free maps, including a whole bunch of, you know, like USGS topo maps that you can get for free. So they've got nautical ones. I mean, they've got all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a rabbit hole you can go into if you're a map geek. Yeah. But it's really, 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 really handy resource.
It's totally allowed me to like go where I want to go and find out where that road goes and not be worried about, oh, you know, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
Because even if you're bushwhacking, which I did a couple times to try to get around that lake,
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because that blue dot pops up. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, according to the blue dot, I'm, you know, 100 feet away from right. where the road is or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's it really, really facilitates exploration.
Yeah, it was cool.
So, and I think, I don't know if I said it or not, but in the case of the iOS app, it's Avenza Maps.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird name.
A-V-E-N-Z-A.
Yeah. But it used to end up being PDF Maps. They recently ended up changing the name of it. But it's a really good application.
Yeah. So we'll go to get Avenza, that app. It's good.
Yeah.
And then just start buying maps.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or just downloading the free ones. Because,
right.
you know, I mean, in this is probably more information than what the you know most people out there want. But, like, we live by the National Forest. And then, you know, the National Forest, that's, like, part of the Department of Agriculture. So what their job is to harvest trees. So, you know, I could be wrong in this, but if I remember correctly, the National Forest Service makes more roads than any other organization in the country. So it's like, even like, you know, in the entire state of, you know, Michigan, Texas, whatever big state you want to pick.
Sure.
they don't build and maintain as many roads as the National Forest Service.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, when you look at it, you know, like the primary job of the National Forest Service is to, it seems like, to build roads so that loggers can come in and
harvest.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know, I mean, that's what the Department of Agriculture does.
Yeah. And those roads are all over the place. You can see them from years ago.
And that's exactly what the thing that's so cool about it.
Yeah.
Because I know in our area, there's a lot of legacy roads that they might have closed down that are still, you know, the corridor is open.
Yeah.
So it makes for some really, really, really good cycling.
Yeah.
You know, you can link things up and you can do a lot of this type of stuff. So, you know, looking at some of those maps, like, I mean, you know, you can get topos from the 30s and, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s and, you know, in the 60s. And a lot of those roads are, there's still signs of them out there now.
And all of a sudden, you're the smart dude who's got a shortcut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you can just link up some cool stuff.
You can, yeah.
So, you know, doing that research in the National Forest, and I don't know how much this applies to any other kind of lands,
let's just, you know,
BLM or, yeah. you know, DNR or whatever.
Okay.
But, you know, when it comes to the National Forest, it's a really, really, really good research tool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike, for bringing that up.
Yep. Let the adventures begin.
Whenever you're in town, stop by and check out this bathroom. But we also got a nice email from Keith. Want to give a shout out to Keith. Keith's got a great story, man. He's awesome. But he sent us this email. He says, and this is what his email. Keith lives out in
Well, Michigan. This was the initial email.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, there was a second email.
Yeah, right,
yeah.
Right, right.
But
so
we'll
is the first one. He says, "Hey guys, this is not just to make you feel good about yourselves. Podcast 8, because I said, hey, email us so we can feel good about ourselves, and he emailed us not to make us feel good about. Anyways, let's talk winter and fat bike brake compounds. What's best for cold, wet, and snowy months? Should I keep it organic, summer compound, or go with sintered brake pads? Are there other compounds that would work better than this too?" Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then he goes on. If I'm switching brake pad compounds, should I seat in a second set of discs? And last of all, size. I use my bike all year round and have two wheel sets, a set of 29 plus Surly Rabbit Holes with Maxxis Chronicles, and run the 200 millimeter 4 and a 100 millimeter rear. Do you think that makes a difference in your winter fat biking adventures?
So, when it comes to brake pad compounds, I'll be honest, you know, like during the winter, a lot of times if you're riding in snow, your brakes don't make that big a difference.
Right.
Maybe somebody out there, I'd be interested to find this out. I don't really know anything, other than what my experience is. Nothing's really kind of, you know, no cream has risen to the top, if you would, but frankly, it doesn't make a difference if you're organic or you're a metal-sintered pad.
Right.
Both seem to work pretty similar in the winter. And most of the time, you're not really touching your brakes because you're plowing through powder or this, that, or whatever. You know, it's like the snow is clean. There's not a lot of dirt and stuff in there. So one pad compound or the other doesn't really work better. So in other words, like organic pads, they generally work pretty darn good during the winter.
Are they more expensive?
There really, price is insignificant.
Okay.
The difference between organic and like a metal centered pad is how long they hold up in gritty conditions.
Right.
Like if you're in like muddy, nasty, wet conditions, you can just burn through a pair of organic pads like literally in a ride.
Yeah.
So the metal centered pads hold up a whole bunch better. The thing is though, the metal pads, they tend to have lower braking power.
Oh.
And they sometimes will make noise. It kind of depends. It, you know, every brake is different. Every rotor is different. Different, you know, resonant frequencies and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So, but a lot of times the metal ones end up being a little noisier than, you know, the organic pads. So if you're riding in wet conditions, typically what you want to do is go with metal center pads and you want to go with a bigger rotor. Okay. Because that what that'll do is that'll return the power that you lost, and it'll, you know, basically kind of deal with some of the negatives that come along with the metal centered pads. And the other thing is, you know, it's like, well, if you got all this grit and stuff in there, you're going to wear out your rotors quicker.
Yeah.
So, you know, having a bigger rotor, that'll distribute the load a little better. So, you know, you get a little more life out of it, you know, all these other kind of positives. So, I guess, you know, when it comes to, let's say, dry summer conditions, or pure winter conditions, organic is great. You know, organic does totally fine. Mm-hmm. But it's those transitional periods.
The
where,
shoulder seasons.
Yes. Where it gets sloppy and nasty and stuff like that, right. Where the metal center pads are really good.
Gotcha.
Or if you live in a place where you don't really get snow, you just kind of get rain and nastiness over the winter, then, you know, the metal center pads are where it's at.
I got a question about the rotors that he's using, those 200s.
Yeah.
Those are freaking big.
Yeah, but I don't remember the specifics, but like we said, we kind of got into an email exchange with Keith because, you know, right. We kind of, as soon as he sent us an email, we responded right away.
Right.
And we're kind of like, this, and we're kind of going over it now.
He's using the podcast we. I forward all the technical stuff to Ken. I just respond with the feel good stuff.
But Keith's got a pretty cool story. He's lost a whole bunch of weight since fat biking started and, you know, a bunch of stuff like that. He's got a pretty sweet bike setup. But you know, he's still a big dude.
Yeah.
And you know, based on his weight and size and stuff like that, I mean, this 200 millimeter front rotor and 180 rear is a great setup. It's really appropriate.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't sure what he was necessarily asking. Wasn't totally clear, but like, I'm a big fan of running a one size bigger front rotor than rear rotor.
Okay.
Because you can get so much more braking power out of your front wheel than you can out of your rear wheel that kind of balances stuff out.
Okay.
So you're dealing a lot of times typically with, you know, similar sort of lever pull pressure or whatever you want to call it, force.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I always feel like, you know, I personally run like typically a 180 front and 160 rear.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty nice setup.
Yeah, and he's doing the same thing, just, you know, one scale up. But
yeah, I mean, he's heavier than I am, yeah, so it's appropriate.
Man, he's half the man he used to be, though, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, and it was really cool kind of, you know, quote-unquote conversing with him or whatever you want to call it through email.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like he had a great story about how, you know, positive a fat bike had changed his life.
Totally, yeah. So, Keith,
cheers.
Keep it going, brother, right on.
Yeah, right on.
Next one that we got was from Mike. He's somewhere in Michigan.
Didn't necessarily specify, but
which is fine. We're good with this. But this this is what Mike from somewhere in Michigan wrote to us. He said, "You said email, so here is one. I've been riding a Trek Top Fuel 8 with a Bontrager drop line dropper post. I got up to Marquette in Copper Harbor. First off, the dropper rocked. I added a Stans Arch EX wheel set with Max's Fordcaster 2.35s. Flipped the chip to the low setting, went to a 60 millimeter stem. The bike worked well. Not great on the rock as it was damp, making the rock kind of slippery. What a blast. Before the trip, I was all set on a carbon stash for for next year.
And that's the Trek 29er Plus bike, hardtail.
Excuse me. I ended up doing a weekend test ride on a Specialized Stump Jumper 6 Fatty. Wow.
Now, this is a full suspension bike. I don't remember exactly what the travel is. I think it's like 120 or maybe like up even up to as high as 140 rear suspension travel. So I mean, for a full suspension bike, it's kind of more in that trail category.
Yeah.
You know, it's got some serious cush. This is not a cross country bike.
So he had his eye on a carbon stash, and then he tested a stump jumper six fatty, and he blew his mind. Back to his letter. This was the bike for the UP. I took it to Merrill Trail. That's down by Grand Rapids, where Fat Bike Nationals are going to be on a golf course.
Yep.
Crazy fun. Surprisingly, not nearly as slow due to longer travel, as I expected on flats and climbs. I think I'm going to buy one Friday. Last year's model is $800 off. Darn. Am I completely off my rocker? That is the most fun bike I have ever ridden. Bonus is I do have the Stans 29 wheel set. Love the podcast. Love the tech stuff. This show is right up my alley, so to speak. Plus, you're local. Ooh, I wonder where he does live. Your show really relates to me as we hit some of the same trails. Thanks, guys. This is from Mike.
So with this, I kind of started off by saying, heck no, you're not crazy. A full suspension bike with 650 B plus wheels is a super, 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 super fun bike. Like what he talked about riding on this Merrill Trail, which is, it's a machine belt trail. It's got some good features. It's got great flow.
Yeah.
That's the kind of bike that you can just play around on and you can just have so much of a good time. You know, I'm a fan of the 29 plus. I'm a big dude. It fits me well. There's no sizing compromise when it comes to the bike.
Yeah.
Up to this point, I have not been real big into suspension because, you know, it's like if you go with the bigger wheels and you go with the plus wheels, you can roll over stuff. You can have a lot of efficiency without the added weight and complexity and maintenance that goes along with suspension.
Wait a minute. Don't you have something on order right now?
Yes, I do. Especially, you know, it's basically I got something on order, a full suspension bike from acquiring. But that's for doing things like Copper Harbor and going down to North Carolina
and
going out west and stuff like that. You know, but I'm probably going to ride the crap out of it around here too.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, we've been kind of, you know, fanboys of the 29 plus. That said, you know, the B plus wheel set is still badass. And especially in the full suspension world, if you're getting a bike that's like 120 to 140 millimeter rear end, that's a really, really, really nice setup to have, is like the B plus wheel set. It's small enough that you can still have fairly short chain stays and the bike still feels really nimble and really light and really flickable and you can toss it around, but you just have gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of traction from the plus wheel set.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, yeah, that stump jumper you talked about, I mean, the six fatty, that is going to be a super fun bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that the Stash isn't a fun bike, but modern suspension is just amazing. It's like, it's so efficient as far as your power application. And then it makes the bike so much more capable when you start getting into technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gives you this margin of error. So what you can do is you can just like basically huck off of stuff. And if you happen to screw it up, it'll soak it up. You won't die.
Right.
So, you know, then you can be like, okay, then I need to do it better this time. And you get smoother and smoother and smoother because you can, and you're not going to die. You know, it's just, you can really play around on a bike if it's got gobs of suspension.
Yeah. Who cares now, if it's last year's model? Jeez,
oh, peace. Oh, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, what he was talking about, you know, I just like, no. Like, if you rode this bike and you love it, get that thing. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds like such a fun bike.
Huh.
So that was kind of cool.
Nice. So those were the three emails that we wanted to kind of talk about. And hey, don't hesitate, you know, shoot us a message if you got questions or if you just want to have a happy response from me.
Well, and there's a lot of technical stuff out there. You know, there's quite a few podcasts that are starting to do technical stuff, and sometimes they don't have the most balanced perspective on fat bikes. And I feel like we kind of bring a depth of expertise that, you know,
you.
No.
Not we.
There's a we here. We both have a lot of experience on the fat bikes and the plus bikes and stuff like that. And we can talk about where, you know, there's certain benefits here, there, you know, this is why you want to do this for these conditions. This is why you want to do this for that conditions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how stuff works. There's a bunch of dorkitude that we kind of bring to the table when it comes to the fat and plus world. Yeah. So, you know, if you're sold on having a fun time on some big fat, you know, bouncy wheels, go for it.
Right on, right on.
You know, let us know if you have any questions.
All the local, we all email you too. And we don't even listen. People that don't listen to the podcast still email them.
There you go. Yeah.
Right on. So check us out on the Instagram. Check us, shoot us a message. But I think that pretty much sums up number 19. I don't know. How are we doing on time? Was this one of the shorter ones? Can you?
I think it must be. Yeah. Like the first segment looks like it was about 35 minutes. Second segment, we're almost up to 20 minutes. Jeez.
Dang.
We're under an hour.
We're sub hour.
Wow.
Good Lord. So maybe you got a short commute this year or this time listening to
Yeah, we're not nearly as long-winded as usual.
But
we're getting into the heart of winter, so yeah. We're going to get long-winded because the stoke is high.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Definitely. It's here and everyone's ready to roll in it, so it's good. We probably won't be back till after the new year.
Yeah, we're going to have a good month here. I know that we might be filling in a little bit for the normal, Fat Bike Radio show.
Right.
Yeah, so we might be a little bit more frequent, but we'll see.
Yeah, so, hey, maybe Santa Claus will bring us something.
Maybe.
Drop or post. That'd be awesome.
Let's hope. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I really hope for you that Santa comes.
Oh, my gosh.
You need one.
But, hey, thanks for listening, and... happy holidays, have a good new year, and we'll talk to you in January.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. The music we are using on today's show is from the Free Music Archive. It is a song named Snowstorm, performed by the Hot Pocket Dingleberry Disease. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.